Accession number 14253, Reel 3.
Mr. Pierce, Reel 3.
I'm sorry, I've forgotten. So, because this course was coming up behind us, they had to cancel ours, and the whole thing turned out to be rather abortive from my point of view.
How did the Canadians treat you?
Oh, extremely well. Oh, yes. I mean, there was no shortage of anything in Canada. We used to go across to America, Detroit, somewhere like that, for weekends. We had a very good time there. Yes.
What was the name of this place?
Godrich. G-O-D-E-R-I-C-H. It was in Ontario. Not very far from Toronto. We used to go down to Detroit at the weekends.
Were they fully behind the war effort?
Oh, yes. Oh, very much so. Oh, yes. Oh, there was no dragging of feet at all. No, it was all very much on the ball.
So I interrupted you with, I think you are returning for more naval service in 44.
Well, yes. So when I came back, I was, you know, we were, having been cadets with the Fleet Air Arm, they said, well, now, you know, we can offer you a course as a navigator, which meant going to Trinidad, Fleet Air Arm Navigator, or I think they call them observers. But the war was then getting, you know, getting to an advanced stage. I had a job to go back to in the civil service, and they were saying, we can only offer you a commission if you sign on for so many years. I think it was 5 years. And I said, well, I can't do that. I can't commit myself to 5 years. So, anyway, I said, I don't think observer, you know, would be on. So they said, well, we'll send you on a navigation course. And I did that on Nelson's Victory in Portsmouth, of course, which is quite an interesting experience. And yeah. I was then, from then, sent on what they call a CW cadet, onto the Starling.
Why was it so interesting in Victory?
Well, you know, the thought of the historical background of the place. We used to act as guides when we were off duty, take parties of Americans and overseas visitors round, explain the history of the ship and everything. It was just the very fact of being on such a historic vessel, really. It was quite something unusual.
Sorry, you were saying you joined HMS Starling.
So I was then sent to Starling, the idea being that I would do the seamanship there as a cadet, but of course the war was coming to an end and the whole thing folded. But I enjoyed it on Starling, because Captain Walker had died and Commander Weems had taken over as captain of Starling.
But had Captain Walker's reputation lived on in the ship?
Oh, yes. Oh, he was... I never had anybody... I mean, Captain Walker had been our commanding officer when I was in the Convolvulus. He was the CO of the escort group. And then, you know, I came back to his old ship, the Starling, and I never, ever had anything adverse said about the man at all. He was immensely popular and a very fine seaman captain. And of course you know about his old boys association, do you?
Yes, I do.
Yes, yes. I went up there last year for the they had this Battle of the Atlantic celebration. I went up for that, and it was you know, a very worthwhile experience, really.
What work was Starling doing whilst you were in the ship?
Well, it was really doing a sort of a mopping up operation, I think I would call it. They were going round looking for U-boats, you know, that might be skulking. I remember we went up in the Minches, looking round the Outer Hebrides and all round there. Anyway, where they might be lurking, you know, hoping for an easy victim. By then, of course, the U-boats were very much less of a menace. They were still getting through occasionally, but I think they rather lost heart, and we were very much on top then. I was most impressed by Starling's sort of generally laid-back approach to the thing. You know, they would go in and perhaps drop depth charges without even running the alarm bells. You know, you'd hear the charges go off, and you know they wouldn't even put everyone on action stations. Didn't think it was necessary. It was a very smooth operation.
Did you sink any U-boats in the Starling?
There were one or two, yes, one or two, but there weren't that many around then. The heyday of sinking U-boats had passed, really.
Was there a man called Kelly aboard?
Oh, yes, Darby Kelly. Yes.
A chap who won a lot of decorations.
That's right, yes. I've got you've probably heard of this, the Western Approaches video. You know about that, do you?
Don't think so, no.
Ah, well, I had it. It was advertised.
Careful, you've got the mic on.
Oh, sorry, yes. I was going to say, it was advertised and I bought it anyway. I can tell you about it afterwards if you want to.
Why was he called Darby Kelly?
Well, the Navy had... They had these sort of nicknames for people. Trying to think of any other examples, but I think Kellys were normally called Darby for some strange reason. I can't think what that would be.
When you got these few U-boats in the Starling, did you see any oil or anything on the surface?
Yes, I think there was certainly evidence. Yes, evidence of loss. Yes, was I know they used to have the trick of sending up debris sometimes, but I think you could tell if it was genuine or not. The experts could do that.
Was this in the Minches that you got the U-boats?
No, I think it was probably out more in the Atlantic. We were all round the place, you know, at this time. We were cruising. I had more or less a freelance commission, you know, to wander about, and the war was pretty nearly over, you see, by then.
So you weren't tied to the convoy?
We weren't tied to convoys, no, not at that time. We had been, of course, but not latterly.
How did the efficiency of the Starling compare with the Convolvulus?
Oh, much more streamlined. A more professional approach, really. Because, of course, they had the more senior officers. You know, they had people like Captain Walker, of course, Commander Weems. We were operating very much as a sort of an amateur wartime ship in the Convolvulus. Practically all people in for the war, just for the war.
Were you also happy in Starling?
Oh yes. Yeah, I found the Navy very, very congenial, very, very pleasant. Place to be, really.
And with Starling, you were again just in the Atlantic and coastal waters.
Yes, that's right. We didn't go further afield.
You never went to the Arctic?
No. No, we went up near Iceland once in the Convolvulus. We didn't actually go to Iceland, but we were very near. I remember we took in the Convolvulus, we escorted a submarine on the surface up to Lerwick in the Shepherd Shetlands. We did a sort of patrol around there and up towards Iceland and then came back. But no, we never did the Russian run.
Were these bird-class ships just as uncomfortable as the flower-class ships in your experience?
Well, they were bigger ships, of course. The Starling was a sloop, and the Stork had been. They were bigger, they were that much more comfortable, and they were more, they were I would almost a cross between a large corvette and a destroyer. They used to cut through the water instead of bounce all over it, sort of thing. Yes, they were more comfortable.
Any other memories from service at the time of the Starling?
Well, no, not really. As I say, that the war was running down then, you know, we got over the worst, and no, I can't honestly say there was, no.
How did you come to leave the Navy?
Well, I was demobilised. I was my because I joined fairly early on, my number came up for discharge fairly quickly, and I was sent back to Devonport, my depot. When would that be? Probably about about October 45, and I was demobilised in November 45, so I came back and rejoined the civil service.
Any special memories of VE Day or VJ Day?
Not really, no. No, you know, we celebrated, but nothing particular. It was, in a way, it was a bit of an anticlimax, almost, you know. There had been so much excitement. Now it was all over. It was going back to a fairly humdrum existence. Possibly not the right attitude, but nevertheless, that's the way it struck me, and I think quite a lot of other people too, really. You know, you had to get down and do a pretty, you know, humdrum sort of job again.
What do you think nowadays about the fashion we have for people having to be counselled after they've been in a war?
Well, personally, I think it's a load of nonsense. I mean, I was never counselled. I never felt the need for it. I don't know anyone else who did. I mean, I know some people had a very much more difficult time than I had. But, and no doubt, you know, there were some very sad cases and they probably did need some help. But the vast majority of people that I knew, they just came out of the service and got on with life again, you know, and that was it.
Did you ever have any nightmares or disturbances because of the war?
Oh, no, no. I mean, you'd seen some pretty awful things, but, you know, it happened, you know. I know, I can't honestly say it's lived with me ever since or anything. No.
What was the worst thing you saw?
Well, I suppose the survivors, you know, from these ships that have been sunk. I mean, I can remember one occasion, we couldn't pick all the survivors up because there were U-boats all around, and we were, you know, we were told, if you stop to pick them up, you're going to be sunk, you know, and there may be hundreds more killed, and we picked as many up as we could, you know, while we were going slowly, and then we had to leave some. We just couldn't pick everybody up. It was at night as well, of course. And they were very harrowing times, of course.
What do you feel now in 1994 about having participated in the Second World War?
Well, I don't regret having been involved in it. I suppose, in a way, it was the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me. I enjoyed being at sea. There were some things I didn't enjoy, but then, you know, that's inevitable in a war. I think one looks back, you know, sort of pragmatically, really.